go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Get ready to fuck! You fuckers, fucker! You fucker! Don't you fucking look at me!
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry!
Hello, Larry!
Hands off to Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now!
There's a little medley of what pissed off sounds like. My favorite is the clip of Dennis Hopper from Blue Velvet, which, if you've not seen it, you might consider viewing. It really put the B in bizarre. The best reason to see it is Hopper's portrayal of chronically pissed off homicidal maniac Frank Booth. Hopper steals every scene he's in, other than the one with Dean Stockwell singing Candy Colored Clowns as he uses a drop light for a microphone. How do you not love shit that weird? But lately it seems like we all feel like Frank Booth all the time. And society is taking notice. But as usual, society's take on the rage epidemic is as fucked up as Hogan's goat. Shrinks and government and academia and officialdom of all stripes, they want to treat the symptoms and not the causes, so they offer anger management and medications, which are not in the least bit medicinal. They don't fix anything. They just zonk people. They're still angry, but too sedated to vent that anger. Opioid crisis, anyone? So why are we so pissed off so much of the time? There are a bunch of reasons. Overcrowding. No satisfactory outlets for anger. The sterility and inhumanity of the digital age. The trap that is social media. Our loss of privacy and loss of freedom. We are now less free than we have ever been before. Let's look at overcrowding first. Some old friends visited me recently in LA. They asked what all my New York friends always ask. Do you miss New York? And my answer is, fuck no. I miss some of the people, some of the attitude of the people, like the fast service and delicatessens. I gotta take a quick detour here. In New York City, on just about every block was a bar and a deli. And those delis were amazing. There was one near my office. I used to pop into it just about every morning before work. I'd walk in there, order a fried egg with ham and cheese on a Kaiser roll, a pint of Tropicana, and a coffee light and sweet. The first couple of times I did that, I was in and out in under 5 minutes, maybe closer to 3 minutes. By the fourth time, I was in and out of there in like 30 seconds. By that time, they had my habit locked in. They knew what time I'd be getting there and had the fucking order waiting for me in a paper sack fresh off the grill. It was efficiency cubed. There are damn few delis in Los Angeles. The closest you come is in the supermarkets. They all have deli counters, and they all suck. Here's what always happens there. You walk up to the counter. There are usually three people behind it, sometimes maybe five. But my most recent deli adventure was with three. On the far left is a guy arranging the food trays in the display cases. On the far right is some broad just hanging around. She's got an apron, she's got a hairnet, and she's got a 10-yard stare. In the center is one guy who always looks confused, and he works at two speeds, slow and slower. He has the memory of a late-stage Alzheimer's victim. His back is to me. He's slicing the Munster for some other customer, like he's cutting a fucking diamond. And he turns and asks the customer,
half a pound, right?
And the customer says, no, I asked for 1/3 of a pound. And the deli guy just freezes, like he heard a dog whistle or some ultrasonic signal that toggled the off switch in his brain. And then he swallows hard, blinks a few times, and starts peeling away slices from the pile to try to reduce it from the half pound to one-third. I figure that's going to be another 5 or 10 minutes, so I ask the woman in the apron and hairnet if she could help me. She wrinkles her brow and shakes her head no, as if I just asked her for a kidney transplant. Then she starts counting chicken bags, because, you know, it's much, much more important to have an accurate bag count and a properly art-directed display case than to take a customer's money. So I wait, and finally, the cheese slicer flicks his head at me, and I tell him I want a pound of roast turkey. He asks if I want the select oven gold or the boar's head. I tell him, give me the boar's head. Then he grimaces like somebody just smacked his balls with a claw hammer and whines that he'll have to go to the back. There's none out front here. I know in my bones that if he goes through those gray swinging porthole doors, I will never see his ass again. So I tell him, no problem, I'll take the oven gold. He picks up the turkey, turns his back on me as he works the slicing machine. Maybe 20 seconds elapse when he turns around and asks me, how much do I want? I tell him a pound, and he looks at me like I just told him in Russian. Then I hold up one finger. He starts slicing again. So yeah, that's what I miss about New York. The efficiency of the merchants was mind-blowing. In L.A., everyone from the deli man to the dentist is not thinking about slicing turkey or filling your cavity. They're thinking about their next audition. But still, as fucked up as L.A. is, I vastly prefer it to New York for not only the weather, but the far lower population density. When I think back on what I most disliked about New York, it was unquestionably the subways. Packed into them like canned sardines, stifling with no air conditioning. Back in episode 41, The Point of No Return, I related a story of how I once encountered a survivor of a Nazi death camp on a subway ride, and he told me how the train ride to Auschwitz was far more humane and pleasant than the one we were sharing on that hot summer New York evening. The subways were fucking hell, and it seems they are again, filthy, dangerous, uncomfortable, and unreliable. So why are we so pissed off so much of the time? Population density has a lot to do with it. Over the last century, Americans have moved by the millions from rural to urban areas. If you've been around a while, you may recall all those prophets at the dawn of the digital age who claimed by the early 2000s we'd all be telecommuting. Freeways would be empty as every office became a home office, or as they called them back then, a virtual office. Hasn't worked out that way, has it? Maybe for freelancers, but by and large, corporate employers want your ass in a seat at a desk from 9 to 5 and beyond so they can keep an eye on you. But now so many of us are packed into smaller, shittier places, of course we are angrier. What's the source of rage? Other people and our proximity to them. Which got me thinking about a fantastic piece I read a long time ago, written by the late and very, very great Tom Wolfe. He was one of the superlative writers of the late 20th century. The Right Stuff was excellent, but Bonfire of the Vanities, that was beyond fantastic. Along the way to novelist, Tom was a terrific journalist and essayist, unlike these fucking hacks who now write, finger quotes, just about all online sites, BuzzFeed, Vice, HuffPo, all shit, all the time. As Truman Capote said, those people aren't writing, they're typing. And you'll note that what they do is rarely called essays or reportage or stories, it's content. Which is kind of fitting when you think about it. Content is what's written on a sack of any commodity, from cow shit to driveway gravel. The Tom Wolfe story that may explain our rage was called Oh, Rotten Gotham, Sliding Down into the Behavioral Sink. I first read it when it had been folded into the final chapter of his book, The Pump House Gang, which was a damn good book. Although he was a southern boy, Wolf lived and worked in Manhattan a long time, and he knew all about the perils of population density. And then he stumbled on a study about it and wrote about it. In the late 1950s, when people first started to wonder about the effects of overcrowding, some guy named Calhoun, with an advanced degree and a lab coat and rubber gloves and a clipboard, this guy poured nearly 100 rodents into a big box in a barn and gave them all the food and drink they needed. And everybody got along just fine. As the mice reproduced, which happened damn fast, they began to exhibit some troubling behaviors. Infant mortality skyrocketed. The ones that lived were suddenly neglected by the parents. Sexual deviation spiked. Cannibalism became commonplace, even though they were provided plenty of food and water. In time, the original population of about 100 had grown to over 2,000 mice, and their societal structure had completely broken down to anarchy and wanton destruction. By the 600th day, so many had killed each other that Calhoun concluded the population was well on its way to extinction. Are people any different? Everybody wants money, lots of it. Why do we want it? Because it can buy not just freedom, but space. And we really want space so we can put some distance between ourselves and fellow bipeds. What apartment dweller who has to share walls with others and listen to their music and their toilets flush and them fighting and screwing and blasting their shit music and spray for the roaches they attract? Who the fuck doesn't dream of their own home with four unattached walls and maybe a yard for some fresh air and sunshine? Well, just about everyone does, except for hive mentality commies who prefer living with their heads literally up each other's asses. Different nationalities have different preferences for personal space. How close can someone get to you before you want them to back the fuck off? Well, they've done extensive studies on this too. Argentinians like to get twice as close as Romanians, same as Hungarians and Peruvians. So just the fact that we are more crowded than ever before is a major reason why we are furious. But even when we get some alone time, what do? We spend it online, surrounded by 5 billion other Facebook fuckheads or tweeting twits and Reddit ratbags. And when we're there, do we feel any better or do we feel worse? Most research leans decidedly toward the worse column. It says social media is fucking people up. Why do people give a shit about social media? When you stop and think about it, that's the most insane thing in the world. It's no different than scribbling fuck you on the tiles above the urinal and coming back the next day to see your work crossed out and edited by some other schmoof with a Sharpie. I wonder if gangs in major cities are now using social media the same way they've used Krylon and brick walls to mark territory and send signals. Do they have Twitter and Instagram wars? Does it reach a point where they snap and then hop in their whips and do a drive-by? Another social media factor that contributes to anger is the relentless phony bullshit so many people spray onto it day in and day out. You know the ones. Dig my house, dig my car, dig my toys, dig my vacation, dig my perfect, perfect life. Of course, that imagery has been omnipresent since the dawn of the advertising age long ago, but we knew it was bullshit. Impossibly good-looking individuals shilling cigarettes and cars and soup and you name it. But nobody knew any of those impossibly good-looking people with the perfect lives. Well, now we do. And that's a lot harder to swallow. That asshole on your Facebook feed cavorting in front of his new Bentley isn't some star athlete or Kardashian. It might be your boss or the father of one of your kids' classmates. Let's not overlook the electronic leash all our devices have given our employers. Most everyone is on call 24/7. That's enough to piss off anybody. In France, they've passed a law that employers cannot obligate workers to answer email and texts at home. They have the right to disconnect. I applaud that. So hard, my hands might bleed. There's no question our devices and social media are a major contributor to global anger. And the platforms love it, because research proves conclusively that rage goes viral much faster than other emotions. So Facebook and Twitter algorithms deliberately serve you stories that are gonna piss you off. The angrier you are, the more of your life you piss away on their platforms. And to think, they want to eliminate hate speech. How's that for some pretzel logic, Their term, by the way, is bullshit. There's only speech. The moment we allowed them to segment and categorize speech, we sanctioned a tool by which to isolate words they don't like. Words they label toxic, hateful, dangerous, offensive, inappropriate, etc. And therefore they try to eliminate them. It's all for your safety. And social media platforms have vast departments for safety, which is fucking ludicrous. When's the last time somebody was injured or killed by a flying post or a tweet? It's absurd. The next asshat politician or teleprompter reading halfwit who uses the phrase, "Tone down the rhetoric," they should have an aneurysm on camera and bleed out through their nose and tear ducts. Besides social media and overcrowding, there's no real satisfactory outlets for anger anymore. As kids, we could fight, we could name call, you could vandalize, there were abandoned houses and cars, you could buy fireworks and blow shit up. Now what can you do? Breathe deep and count to 10? Scream into a pillow? How humiliating. All those fine anger venting options are now off the table for kids and adults. For kids, it's use your words. But now that hundreds of anger-alleviating words are forbidden, you don't hear that one so much anymore, do you? I'd like to hear somebody in like that Sam Kinison screech ask those Montessori oracles what fucking words are kids supposed to use. There aren't any. How many times have you sat in a bar or restaurant or maybe on a train or a bus and got a feeling, kind of a back-of-the-neck feeling, and turned around to see some creep staring at you for fuck knows what reason? Most of us don't like to be watched, and we can often intuit when we are. Even dogs will turn their back on you when they take a dump. Canines seek a certain measure of privacy, too. But now, as my buddy Darren O'Neill just explored in his new spin-off podcast, Grumpy Old Ben's, you should check it out, our privacy is just gone. Our phones are listening to us, tracking our every move. Alexa and Google Home are listening to us. The streets are carpeted with government cameras. Every gas station, 7-Eleven, store, bank, every house has a Ring video doorbell pointed at the street. We live under relentless surveillance, and everything is being recorded. That's got to be a factor contributing to the age of rage. Ask guys that have done time. They'll all tell you the same thing. The worst part about doing a pull in the joint is the noise. Constant, relentless noise without escape all night long. Assholes screaming and belching and farting and playing with themselves and singing, all echoing off concrete walls and floors and ceilings. And the reason cons are subjected to all that noise is, of course, the lack of privacy and personal space. Which circles back to the money thing. Nobody ever gets rich and buys a one-bedroom in a complex or an economy car. Most everyone wants space to ride in, to live in, to put a little distance from the guy next door. Maybe the best quotation on the subject is that line from Robert Frost, "Good fences make good neighbors." There's even a theory around that says collective rage is a cyclical phenomenon, that there's a global rage spike every 50 years or so. They tie it to boom and bust economies and scarcity and bounty. But it seems kind of like a bullshit theory. And then there's the freedom factor, or the lack thereof. Every minute of every day, some jackholes in D.C. or your capital city or your village are passing new laws that most often further restrict your freedom to do what you want to do, go where you want to go. Try going to your bank sometime and withdrawing several thousand bucks of your own money in cash. They'll put you through the third degree. What the fuck business is it of theirs? Did they ask you questions when you deposited that money? And if it's 10 grand or more, that trips a wire, and the IRS must be notified. So how do you decompress? How do you feel more happy and less pissed off? When my kids were babies, and I'd come home from work in a rage, my wife would take one look at my face and say, "Go hold your daughter." And I would grab her, and presto, I'd chill out. Dogs have a similar calming effect on most people. A run or a good workout helps. A couple of belts of 80-proof bourbon mellows most of us out, although for some guys, it's gas on a fire. I try to unplug whenever possible. Ignore the news. Stay the fuck offline. It will be there when you next log on, I promise you this. And in your absence, not one damn thing will have changed. Not one. Most memes are kind of stupid, but one that's not says, "Life is short. Spend as much time as possible fighting with strangers on Twitter." Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. I'm just about to post this month's bonus episode. It's about dealing with the karmic boomerangs in our lives, inspired by a listener who, in his mid-30s, got a big surprise, an 8-year-old daughter. It's an amazing story, and it's only available to subscribers at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Stop by thatlarryshow.com for 185 other episodes and essays and video and pictures and more. And while there, click one of those subscribe buttons so you never miss an episode. You can write to me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. And hey, don't forget to follow the show on Twitter. It's a great place to get pissed off. I'll see you next Tuesday or thereabouts. And until that time, take no shit.